Welcome to Crash Concepts, where the economy, energy, and the environment are explored. Up next, fresh ideas and insights into the factors that are driving the world and shaping your future. Presenting information you can't afford to live without, here's Chris Martinson.
Welcome to this Peak Prosperity podcast. I am Chris Martinson, your host, and today I am with Robert Misch of Misch International Monetary Incorporated, not related at all to the other Misch we regularly talk to. Robert's business is located in Menlo Park, California, and he knows as much about the coin market and precious metals markets as anybody you could ever talk to. He has been on the front lines of the precious metals business, selling, dealing, buying rare coins, numismatic coins, gold, silver bars, you name it. And with that frontline view, he has an extraordinary perspective because he gets to see who's coming in, who's buying, who's selling. And there are some really interesting stories there we're going to cover, especially in light of the recent plunge in gold and silver prices. But as well, and this is really important, he has been in business, the precious metals business to be precise, for 50 years. So he was there and he saw it back in 1980 during the frenzy of that last gold bull and silver bull. And so, Robert, I'm very happy to have you back because there's been a lot of speculation, there's been a lot of rumors, there's a lot of smoke, and we need to understand where the fire is. So welcome back.
Thank you, Chris. And as you said, greetings from the front lines of the gold coin and bullion business. I bring you and our listeners an eyewitness report as to how the gold community reacted with their cash to the price shakeout of the past 2 weeks.
Excellent. I love actions more than words. That's the kind of guy I am. So did I leave anything out of the intro that will help people understand just how deep you've been in this business?
Let me first explain our point of observation. It's a different one than internet and institutional bullion sellers might have. As you noted, we're 51 years in business, 32 at the same location in Menlo Park, California. It's adjacent to Stanford University in the heart of the Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. We have a retail showroom. Our experiences and perspectives and observations come from grassroots buyers and from colleagues who come to us for resupply when needed quickly.
Mm-hmm.
We do not sell from an internet site, nor eBay listings or auction. We do not sell paper gold or gold for custody or for third-party storage.
Yep.
We meet and get to know most every one of our customers in our showroom. Much of our business is by referral, by introduction from existing clients, fund managers, financial advisors, as well as other coin dealers. This puts us in an interesting and sometimes fascinating position to observe the temperament of gold and silver buyers and sellers, from small but consistent buyers to major investors so preferring real metal they will carry out impressive values and secure it themselves.
Well, I can't wait to dive into who's doing the buying and selling from your perspective, but I want to set the stage. Let's rewind here. Here we are. It's last Friday, huge plunge. It's Monday. The plunge continues. Really, it's a historic drop. You have to go back 30 years to find an equivalent drop in dollar terms for gold. And from your perspective, we had a similar, although not quite as large, drop in 2008. We had another one in 2011. What was different or the same for you in how people reacted to really a historic price plunge in both gold and silver?
You know, whether there's something different about the great gold shakeout of April 2013, you know, it's a common topic we discuss with both our clients and dealer colleagues. That's one of the reasons I'm on the phone sometimes till midnight.
Hmm.
You know, spikes and plunges in the U.S. dollar price of gold, you know, this is not new. It goes back to the early 70s. We remember that for most of the past 40 years, physical gold and silver investors, particularly in the U.S., they tended to chase big rallies and buy late, while too often selling after plunges or after long periods of price erosion. Gold was sold then primarily as an inflation hedge. When it was working, speculators bought much more. When it stopped working as an inflation hedge, they first became puzzled, then frustrated, then fearful, and they sold out at bottoms.
Hmm.
So fast forward to this month, and today's gold community starts to look a bit different, I think. You know, as the breakdown below previous gold and silver price support levels began, and especially last week, with gold below 1,400, physical buyers were outnumbering sellers in our store by at least 5-1.
Hmm.
And some of the unfortunate sellers, you know, they had not changed their thinking about gold long term. They just needed fast liquidity, which is another benefit of gold.
Right.
We had one who got caught being very long leveraged gold COMEX contracts, and another very leveraged with gold stocks he had loaded up with too soon. Mm-hmm. He had deep regrets, but he had to sell a large quantity of Krugerrands to settle his account.
Ouch.
Yeah. Well, we accommodated just a few sellers, you know, mostly newer buyers, say, since 2011, who bought for the wrong reasons. You know, they bought because gold was going up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, their timing wasn't ideal. I mean, gold eroded for 2 years. They grew impatient. And when the Bankster Media anti-gold propaganda campaign turned up the heat in late February through early April,
right,
and the price broke below perceived support, and they were told in advance when that would happen, you know, they panicked and sold. You know, many of them didn't need the money. They were worried gold was going to $1,000 or lower.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these were really just a few folks, and they were either new faces to us. Maybe they bought on the Internet but got a quick lesson that you need a local relationship when the urgency manifests. Or, you know, there were recent buyers who did not read and digest the articles we forward regularly to our customers. They were not saving in gold. They were gambling.
Right.
They don't read Chris Martinson,
mm-hmm,
or Zero Hedge or Dollar Vigilante, Jim Willey, or Lou Rockwell.
Mm-hmm.
But again, unlike every major gold price drop, the physical gold and silver owners, you know, were really selling little.
And this 5-to-1 buyers to sellers you mentioned, that's on a dollar basis?
It's on a numerical basis. We had good response from regulars who were not afraid of dips, you know, so-called corrections in the long-term bull market. You know, their attitude is gold is on sale, or I'm selling my way overpriced Palo Alto house, said one, you know. But the majority of people who have crowded our showroom daily are price-savvy working people and families, you know, particularly Silicon Valley tech workers from India. They're small buyers, but the gold community could learn a lot from them. You know, they buy fully paid, no leverage.
Right.
They take immediate physical possession.
Yep.
If you don't got it, they're not going to wait. They may buy 1, 2, 3 ounces a month or more, you know, accelerated on price drops.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those in the gold community who rightfully complain about collusion and manipulation by the bullion banks and their gold short clients and government backers, you know, while they themselves are long paper gold, are really losing the game playing in the bankster's home court. You know, instead, I think gold bulls should best reexamine why they own gold and treat gold as a storehouse of value, as savings, as liquidity out of the system. They should be like the Chinese and Indians, keep taking delivery of physicals. In a legitimate market, you know, this will end the paper shorting and move physical gold from the banksters back to the people, or at least publicize and sooner help bring down the corrupt paper market with snowballing events of failure to deliver, you know, like what happened in late March when the giant Dutch bank, ABN AMRO,
yep,
converted their clients' physical gold accounts, you know, to paper price settlement only.
Yeah.
So, you know, Chris, all those gold investors who allowed the banksters to store their gold are vulnerable to what may be the banksters' ultimate exit pass when they declare an emergency force majeure, pardon my French, you know, failure to deliver with the conversion of the undelivered, non-existent gold to depreciated cash settlement, bases their paper gold market with the cash being created by the banksters and governments themselves in an emergency financial bailout. You know, if I was a bankster, you know, that's what I would do if I were trapped in a gold and silver short carry trade.
Yeah, you know, they're just doing what they always do, which is they're just making money. And one of the things that I really trust, two things. One is I trust actions more than words. And the second thing is that I think a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. And so here's where I'm going with that. It feels to me like the end game of all of this, when the dust finally settles, there'll be some moment when currencies, you know, have their final moment in the bonfire. And at that moment, there will be two classes of people, those and institutions, those that actually have physical possession of precious metals and those that don't. And in that process, after the dust is settled, we'll discover that the people who have the physical precious metals have a tremendous amount of wealth, and the people who don't have lost a tremendous amount. And it'll be a wealth transfer. And this is what the system excels at. So I'm really interested in who the buyers were. So I understand the sellers. There's a lot of sellers. I heard stories. They were rather tragic to me. I was talking with another dealer that runs IRA accounts and physical bullion deals as well. And they said almost all of their sellers were people who had paper gold and silver in the sense that they hadn't taken physical possession. They had gold in 401ks, silver in some sort of custodial accounts, and they hadn't touched it. So they were the quickest to part with it because they just, you know, it's ones and zeros. It's
they
just
have
a holding.
No relationship
to it. The buyers, though, let's talk about them for a minute because here's a theory I'm working on. Everybody I know who's in the business had a tremendous sales volume. There's obviously some shortages in some certain key products. And my theory is that this shortage has happened almost completely with just a little bit of uptick in interest among those who predominantly already own gold or silver or have already been in the market. That is that the market didn't suddenly grow five times larger, meaning we have five times as many new entrants who've never bought gold and silver showing up for the first time because the price signal sent them in. I'm wondering if that's true or not. What would you say about that theory in terms of those people who showed up?
Absolutely. I didn't take statistics, but just thinking back on it, 80-90% of the people who have bought gold from us in the last 2 weeks on the drop were already gold owners, already gold savers.
And so with this high repeat customer base, it really means that how many people would you estimate in the population, percentage-wise, who have money that they invest? How many of those people actually own physical gold or silver?
Less than 5%, maybe 1, 2, 3% at the most.
Yeah, on my neck of the woods, I'd peg it at about 1%. I mean, I could go to a party with 100 people in it, and I'd be lucky, I think, to actually find one other person who actually had physical gold. I might find somebody who had GLD or something like that. But so here's the thing. I want to talk now about the supply constraints that have shown up and whether you've experienced them, because what I've experienced looking at all of these other dealers, both at what I'll call a kind of a retail level. I've talked to institutional dealers, certain, particularly on the silver side, just an absolute shortage of product. And that happened because the 80 to 90% of the people who already were involved in buying silver just showed up and decided to do a little more of that or gold. And so that observation needs to be coupled to stage two of this bull market, which is when broad public participation, when 10% of the population wants gold or silver, or 20, your perception on what would happen to the supply
chain.
Exactly.
Well, the powers that be guided a lot of that potential demand into paper gold and exchange-traded products of various forms, and then they slaughtered those products. I'm sure in their mind, hopefully, discouraged those people for a long time. But, you know, in time, changing cultures and the prosperity of people internationally in cultures which understand gold, I think, is going to take its toll on the shorting game. And the shorting game will end badly. And that doesn't mean that those who have the other side of the equation necessarily will profit because they'll find a corrupt way to burn them.
Of course.
You know, I mean, what we have now is it's like a game of chicken between the physical buyers and the paper shorters. It's like, who will quit first?
Mm-hmm.
We have a shortage of physical product, which I'll explain in more detail.
Excellent.
But we're told by the mint distributors and the refiners that, oh, don't worry, 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks, your orders will arrive. But if the buying continues at the pace it's going, or begins to expand to a greater percent of the population in this country and worldwide, you know, eventually, by asking for delivery, the physical buyers will change the game. It's a poker game of both real cards and bluffing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Are the shorts bluffing? Yeah, but they get away with it over and over again. And this time with a long fold, as they have in the past, you know, the shorts, they sandbag the river, but the flood of fiat currency keeps rising. If buyers would stick to their guns and develop habits and understand why they buy gold and silver, the shorts will run out of sand.
Excellent. So let's talk about the supply then. What are you seeing from your end, I know that every time I've been to your store, you seem to have a remarkable amount of supply, and obviously you've got a very deep network, and so you've been in business a long time. So you probably have as deep a set of supply chains as anybody could ever hope for in your business.
Yes, that's one of the blessings of being in business long enough. You build up your own inventory and relationship, so when things get difficult, you're in a better position than many of your colleagues to service your customers. But you know, I still can't get immediate delivery of a lot of product. I'll start with gold.
You know, okay.
Gold is a little bit backlogged. The premiums are slightly elevated. Products such as commonly traded, such as gold maple leafs, American Eagles, and refiner 1 ounce bars are 2-3 weeks out, and for some of my colleagues further away in the supply chain, 4, 5, 6 weeks out. You know, the premiums are up maybe $5 to $15 an ounce over normal, and I don't blame the distributors for that. They're getting rationed, so mm-hmm. they have to make more money on fewer ounces to pay their expenses, and it's just simply a matter of supply and demand.
Yep.
So the question is, you know, what's it going to be like 4 weeks from now? Are we going to be caught up, or are we going to still be 4 weeks out?
Right.
We'll see. Silver is another story. The demand for silver has completely overwhelmed existing inventories and the ability of the mints and the refiners to produce more product. And, you know, the other big mystery is how much more silver is there to make product out of. Will it? Will the buyers be able to keep the pressure on until price of silver and paper silver have to move up just to return the market to equilibrium? Right now, 100-ounce silver bars, which a few months ago were trading dealer to dealer around melt or little over, are now 75 cents to a dollar an ounce. Our cost, not retail, our cost.
Mm-hmm.
And 4 to 8 weeks out, you know, 1 ounce and 10 ounce refiner product used to be 30, 40, 50 cents. Now it's $1.10 to $1.25, our cost, 2, 3, 4 weeks out. Silver maple leaves, our cost from the prime American distributor of the Canadian Royal Mint today, $3.75. It was $1.70 a month ago, 3 to 4 weeks out.
Mm-hmm.
Silver Eagles, normally a little over $2. They're $5 if you want them live, $4 if you want them in 4 to 6 weeks. These premiums are the physical market saying we're willing to pay this for real silver right now. Whether the suppliers can meet this demand and bring the premium down, we'll see weeks from now. It's much different this time than it was in the past, in that the drop in price is bringing in buyers rather than sellers. It used to be that a rally would bring in the buyers.
Hmm.
So we've had a change, and you know, it's not just in the United States, Chris. I was in China and Hong Kong in early April when gold first started testing support at 1540.
Yep.
You know, demand was already heavy then. I was at the Hong Kong International Coin Convention, an event I've gone to since 1983. Dealers, investors from China, you know, they cleaned us out of Chinese gold panda coins, both bullion-related and premium dates, and that's with gold at 1540 to 1580. We were getting, you know, 1700 to 1900 an ounce for common coins.
Wow.
You know, then 10 days later, with gold in the 1300s and 1400s, the Chinese public, they cleaned out most every shopkeeper and bank bullion department of all their coins and bars. You know, a few days ago, I talked to three of my English-speaking colleagues in China. They say, you can't get anything anywhere. They wanted me to reship pandas back to them.
So you've been going to this coin show since 83, and you get there. What day did you get there, and how long does it last? And did you sell out by the end of the show or at the beginning? How long did it take to sell out?
Well, I got there. The show is Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I got there the Sunday night before because there's an auction and I have a lot of private business and clients that I see outside the show, and could already see that I had to decide, you know, who my better friends were, because, you know, they all want the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But by the show, it was so packed there. I mean, if we were in America, the fire marshal would have closed it down. But it's the same thing, you know, in India, Thailand, you know, Dubai, China. I mean, gold buyers are willing to, you know, pay 15-20% premium and take the gold as jewelry if that's all there is. You know, in Hong Kong, the cash physical market, even for larger bars, which are always available cheap there, it was several dollars higher than the paper price. In Taiwan, even today, gold's trading at a $60 an ounce premium because the central bank there controls the flow of gold in and out of Taiwan, but they still are willing to pay $60 an ounce premium. You know, in Central Europe, you know, it's a common trade coin that they trade in Eastern Europe. They like the old circulating coins. For example, the Hungarian 10 kroner, you know, they used to be available near melt. They're running 20% over melt.
Hmm.
I mean, the common Tsar Nicholas Russian 10 ruble coins, which are very common. It's the basic trade coin of Russia at the time. I mean, they must melt for a little over 350 today. They're actually trading at 550. And the 5 ruble, which melts under 180, they're trading at 250. Similarly, all over. So if you got a tradable product, a medium of exchange, something that's trusted other than paper, the market says gold is higher, silver is higher.
Now, I, pardon my ignorance, I need to back up around this idea of silver being 4 to 6 weeks out. I'm just wondering, I might be completely ignorant about this, but I'm wondering, is there a risk in here of somebody placing an order and their silver is supposed to come 4 to 6 weeks out? And tell me if this is an insulting question or if this might possibly happen depending on the dealer you're with, but what happens if I place an order and they say, oh, took your order, and 6 weeks from now we'll have your eagles, and the price of silver, I don't know, doubles, triples, does something. Is there any danger of that deal being broken?
No, the dealers, they get their price basis locked in at the time they make the sale, if they're smart. When we sell bullion beyond what we have in physical stock, in fact, even when we sell what we have and we just want to replace the position rather than sell down our position, our distributors and mints, they will guarantee your price.
Mm-hmm.
Just the delivery lag time. If there was a default, it would come either from a major refiner, I won't name any names, hope it never happens, or from one of the world mints that commonly make the product.
All right, so the risk, such as it is, exists all the way at the back end of the chain down at the refiner or mint level.
Yeah.
All right, just wondering. I'd always wondered about that. So given that there's not a lot of risk in that as you see it, why is the premium for near silver so much higher? Why is the demand that much stronger now?
Because certain buyers want it now, and they don't trust the delay, or they think that if they come back in 4 to 8 weeks, silver will be a lot higher, and they're not willing to leave their money out.
Okay.
You know, there are buyers like that. Others just don't want to, you know, sometimes it's a matter of trust, faith. Other times it's just a matter of finishing the transaction. Everyone has a different reason that they're willing to pay more. But with even the distributors charging more, it's a real market.
Yeah. Yeah. So what I'm interested in here is I'm sort of triangulating in on this idea. You've described that there, you know, the sellers seemed a little bit forced, but the buyers, such as they were, really are mainly established customers at this point. And yet there's still something different in the idea that we had this really big price drop, and what that did was just ignite literally a frenzy of buying worldwide. It wasn't just in a local market. It wasn't in the U.S. It's pretty much everywhere, every country you could talk about. And so what I want to get at here is you mentioned that there's this game being played, and it's a question of who blinks. There's going to be the paper sellers and the physical buyers. You and I, you much longer than I have been waiting for, and a lot of other people in the precious metals market are waiting for that moment when the paper people finally have to blink. And it might be actually disappointing to everybody who's on the other side of the paper trade, because they might find themselves, if they're on the long side, getting Hunt Brothered or whatever. So,
Getting MF Globaled.
Or MF Globaled or whatever happens. You know they'll change the rules to benefit the people who are entrenched. And that's just how the game goes. But I'm wondering if there's anything in what you're seeing in these buyers and how they behaved that tells us anything about when that day of reckoning might arrive.
I think the hardest thing for Americans is the downturn and disallocations in the economy, which has put a lot of people out of work, has caused families where both the wife and the husband have to work, has eroded the discretionary income above necessity income. I think there's a limit as to what new capital we can get from a good part of the population until such time as the great inflation begins and as a response to a deflationary scare, as it has happened in Japan. You know, I'm in an island here in the Silicon Valley where everybody is still very prosperous. There's a lot of discretionary income. But I hear from colleagues around the country that all day long they get people in selling their jewelry, selling their watches, selling their parents' coin collection, selling their own. They need money. And this has been the source, a need of a lot of the metal that's come onto the market through scrapping and refining. But even that's finite. You know, I think too many Americans are broke and really can't participate either as suppliers of metal or buyers of metal. But this is an international market, and you have the rising economies and gold-savvy cultures in the rest of the world, and I think that's going to be the driving force.
Well, maybe I'm making too much of it, but it feels to me like part of what I took from the gold buying spree that happened was that there are stronger hands entering this market than at any time I've ever seen, because in past times, the weak hands would have sort of basically won the day, I think, and you would have been swamped with stories of more selling than buying, but
yes. The
opposite has happened. So it's those strong hands that make me think that if that day of reckoning really comes where the paper boys and girls have to really blink and just exit all their positions and get down to just a normal trading volume in real commodities, then that's what I'm waiting for, is for real price discovery to actually happen, because my hypothesis is that the actual real value of gold and silver is much higher than the currently articulated spot price that we're seeing. And I think the entrance of strong buyers means we get closer to that day when pushing the paper price down works against you and causes, I don't know, maybe there's some relationship between price and supply and demand.
I'm sure that what the shorts was hoping to happen was that by crashing the paper price of gold, in addition to forcing paper longs to exit, they would cause a snowball effect where, you know, Americans and people around the world would exit, but the opposite happened. So, you know, if saving in gold becomes more and more part of our culture, and the ability to save in gold with the prospering emerging economies continues, eventually the paper short game will be over. But for now, we don't know where we're at. We could be months away, or we can be years away, because no one shows their cards. It's a lot of bluffing.
And I'm interested in that bluffing, because one of the stories I've been tracking is, and I can only do it anecdotally, unfortunately, the gold market is about as opaque as anything I've ever run into. I have to sniff around the edges and look at smoke and, you know, distorted mirrors and try and figure things out, like everybody. I haven't found anybody who can really say what's going on. And an important point here is that the COMEX market, which drives so much, you know, when that price crash, that happened on the COMEX market. As I've learned, the over-the-counter market, the OTC market for gold, is much, much larger, and it's very, very private, and it's very opaque, and it's not reported at all, and so nobody has good aggregated data. And so I don't really know what's happening there, and yet we wander over into the newspapers, and we find out that gold demand in China has been through the roof, and that India is just going bonkers at these prices, and that Thailand and Australia. So leaving Australia out of this, because I want to make this idea that the flow of gold from west to east seems more pronounced now than it's been in a long time, and it's going at a very, very fast rate. And someday, my hypothesis would be, the West is going to have to figure out how to prevent that from happening. And they can only do it one of two ways. They can raise the price so the East decides they don't want to buy it anymore, or they can shut the markets down. I think that's all that's really available as remedies here. But what are you seeing in terms of that flow?
You did a nice article last week titled Where is the Gold? And you worked with some statistics and found a deficit as to more gold leaving the U.S. Than reported. And I looked at that and I said, yeah, why don't you add to that all the gold that leaves the U.S. that's unreported, all the Chinese flying over here and taking it, all the gold we export in the form of coins and all that's hand-carried and couriered out, it's a lot more. You mentioned, you know, transactions that occur in the over-the-counter market. I don't know of any firsthand, but I am networked enough to have heard more than once, secondhand, thirdhand, that whenever a large transaction is needed, but it really can't go on the market because it'll affect the price too much, or there's too many unknowns in trying to source it, those over-the-counter trades will occur at often considerably higher prices than what we see in trading, just so they can clear that quantity quietly.
Right, so there's an official price and then a real price, and of course we already see the real price at sort of the retail level, if I can place myself there. So if I wanted to pick up the phone and get my hands on Silver Eagles tonight, you're telling me I'm going to have to spend at least $5 over spot, right?
Yeah, sure. And a lot of that is dealer to dealer. We shipped out 5,000 pieces late yesterday to a major online seller at $4.80, and you know they're going to be getting $7. So.
Yep. All right. So this price drop that happened, I'm interested if you know you've been watching the market for a long time, and I'm really interested in something you started with way back at the beginning of this podcast, which was that when we go back to the 1970s, I remember, you know, gold was at 35 an ounce. It was held there. Gold window gets slammed. Then gold gets opened again for private citizens to hold, and it climbs all the way up to, I forget the number, but a little over 200. And then, oh, it got crushed, went all the way back to 100, had a 50% price drop. So that would be like going from 1900 to 950.
That was August of 1976 when it went to 102.
102. And so tell me about what was happening then and what it felt like and how people were responding.
Well, the bullion business was pretty small in America. I can remember a lot of my colleagues thought it was over, and of course that's what makes bottoms. It wasn't like today. There wasn't great buying. It was kind of quiet, and people didn't know whether to buy or sell or just to go about their business.
All right.
1980 was something else.
So, so from that time in 1976, we're at $102, and by 19,
gold climbed a wall of worry that did not get participation until it went to 250, 300, and then started to get volatile again.
Volatile meaning it's up and down, whole increments, huh?
Days where it would, weeks where it would go up or down, you know, 10-20%.
10-20%, and so it goes from 100 to what? It top out about 850 on that intraday.
I think the first leg. I don't have a chart with me. I think it ran up to a little over 300 or near 300, then dropped to the mid 200s, and then began a climb the wall of worry where very few participants until late 79, where it was newsworthy, and everybody who should never buy gold started buying gold.
And so ultimately, from 102 to over 800, so an eightfold climb in that wall of worry.
Yeah, you know, it dropped overnight from a high in the mid 800s to the mid 600s. Talk about a one day drop.
Overnight, huh?
Yeah, it was either overnight or a day and a half. It was really quick.
Yeah,
it got down into the low sixes, I recall, and then rallied to the low sevens, and then began to erode.
Right, and of course, you know, you had an opportunity at that moment if you chose to wander over into 30-year Treasury bonds a little over 14%. That'd be a pretty good deal today, or other things. So there are a variety of conditions that happen, and of course, the Hunt brothers, I believe, are taken down first in that sequence. So actually, silver got hit first, and if you're in the gold pit and you see that the CFTC has just said we're doing liquidation only on silver, you have to wonder if that's coming to gold soon too. So that could put talk about the ultimate margin hike, huh? You know, putting that sort of a thought into people's minds.
100% overnight.
So, of course, it dropped. And lots of conditions are different today to then, but what's not different is the whole idea that you have to climb a wall of worry, that bull markets, their job is to shake as many participants off of them as possible. It's also to hide their early moves from as many people as possible. And so here we are. So, once again, gold and silver painted in my press in the United States is rather reviled things. The anti-gold bugs, if they can call themselves that, have been gloating. That's been fun.
They have to, before they take, you know, ugly political action and corrupt political action, they have to demonize the victims first. So the public goes, oh, well, they deserved it. You know, they demonize the Hutt brothers.
Yeah. Right.
I'm sure they're going to demonize us gold bugs when push comes to shove.
Possibly. And, of course, they'll have to. But this is the great game. And really what's at stake here is, I think, going to be one of the largest wealth transfers that's ever happened, only because of the scale. There have been magnificent wealth transfers where the parties that win and the classes that lose never seem to change, whether it's the Argentinian middle class in 2000 or it's the German middle class in 23 to 28, or it doesn't matter. Anytime you look at what's happened during overprinting periods, it turns out that the wealth transfer has invariably crushed the middle class on down. But not everybody loses in that story, always. And it's a wash, rinse, repeat, Lucy holding the football kind of a thing. It's happened so many times. And it's happening. In your mind, is it just happening again, or is there something different we need to know about this time?
Well, you know, it's an old conversation among us dealers that this time is different, and the joke is it's never different, but maybe this time it's different.
Okay.
You know what I think is going to happen if we allow it? I think that all the banksters who are short gold, they're going to wind up owning all the gold. All the gold mines, they're going to bankrupt them, kill their stocks, take over. And the American public, they're going to wind up owning all the debt that the banksters used to own. It's going to be a switch of positions if they get their way, if we allow it. But if we save in gold and change our culture to match that in Asia and persevere, I think the shorts will lose.
Well, that'll be a day which I will personally come out, and we will crack a bottle of wine and have a barbecue or something to commemorate that, because that'll be quite the day. And it's the difficult part for me is that I'm very clear on that a lot of people are going to have their lives pretty well upended, disrupted, if not ruined, because they're going to lose their wealth because they don't see what's coming or how this is going to transpire.
And they haven't establish themselves as, with skills as part of a community. That's going to hurt a lot of people.
Yeah, and so all of that's happening, and I know bankers, and I call them banksters sometimes, and I guess it's not that the kindest I can be is to say it's amoral, meaning no morals are actually involved. It's just about money and making money, and some people win and some lose, and ever has it always been so, but. At the same time, it's really, really clear what's happening, and that this is happening again, and that you can't print your way to prosperity and all of that. So for the people who are listening, who maybe have not fully established their position, or maybe even haven't begun to establish their position in precious metals, what would you say to them at this point?
Start saving in gold. Make it a habit.
A habit. A weekly habit, monthly habit, whatever works out for you?
Whatever works. They're comfortable with, and whatever falls within the hierarchy of their values of lifestyle.
So gold needs to be and silver saving is a regular part of your life, and
stop playing the paper game in
yep.
the paper world. It's not your home court.
Not
They'll
your home court.
You every time.
Yeah. Oh, they're very good at what they do.
It's Chris, when you've done podcasts in the past, has gold always rallied while you've been on the phone?
No, I haven't noticed that because I can't keep multiple screens open when I have my recording device running.
Well, ever since you've been talking, gold has rallied to $7.
Well, okay, let's keep going then. I got all night.
It's a good job, you know.
Well, listen, Robert, I really appreciate, you know, what I love is that you've been overseas, you have these deep networks, you've been watching this for a long time, 51 years, I mean, congratulations, and it's just amazing, you know, what you've seen. You've been through all the cycles that exist, and it's tempting to say it's never different, but there is, this is something interesting. There's an
end game.
Yeah,
that's what's different. When we reach the end game, it's going to turn out different, and we may be there.
We may be there, but
the game of debt-based money.
Yeah, and that's going to be quite an interesting time. And what's fascinating to me, and a little bit disappointing, is that my country seems to be ambivalent as to whether or not all of our wealth, real wealth, which is gold and silver, flows to the east. And When the dust settles, if currencies go into a bonfire, what we'll find is that the wealth is not here anymore. It's somewhere else. And that'll be, disappointing because we'll need that wealth to rebuild and, you know, keep moving again.
Unless they're so bold and amoral as they are, if you know that you're going to be bailed out, you can do anything you want and gamble with your last dollar on long odds to win. If you know you're going to be bailed out, if you know you're going to renege on all the bonds, let them have a little gold and silver. In the political world, there's things that go on that we don't know and might make sense of a lot of things that puzzle us.
Well, with that, we've been talking with Robert Misch of Misch International Monetary Incorporated, located in Menlo Park, California. And if you want to, if you're out in the area or if you want to get in touch with somebody who certainly has a lot of knowledge and has very deep supply connections and is be more than willing to help you find a way to get started in or build your position in gold or silver, I can't recommend Robert highly enough. He's just fantastic at what he does, wealth of knowledge. So, Robert, thanks a lot. And how would people get in touch with you if they wanted to?
You've been so kind. If they're anywhere in Northern California, they can drop by our showroom. We do take calls at 650-324-9110, and would be happy to help any of Chris Martinson listeners by phone, and we do ship.
Well, fantastic. So thanks again, and I want to stay in touch because I'll be interested to know if the market is loosening up, tightening back up, spreads are going, or what's happening, because it's the front lines is where I think we're going to get our best information, because goodness sakes, I don't think the big boys and girls are going to be very forthcoming in what's actually happening on their end of the story. So we do what we can here and track the tea leaves and make the most of it. But this is certainly very interesting times.
Thank you, Chris.
My pleasure. Good talking to you.